Amazon.
I always like it when we get more than one bite at the apple. I know you don't have high regard for apples, so we'll set that aside as a metaphor. But nonetheless,
our fruit draft needs to be later.
Exactly. But you're getting our one more multiple bites at the strawberry, I think, is probably worth it.
That was my number one fruit. They're very tiny, but very delicious.
Right. Okay. So you don't generally tend to get two bites, but we're just going to go with the metaphor.
I like it.
We're taking another bite. Of course, we're talking about what has been a gift from the Mariners for news stories at a point in the year where there aren't many. So we're going to talk about that in a minute, but I wanted to tell you a little bit of just a quick story about my childhood.
I always wonder how it's going to start. Go ahead, Mike.
I've been wanting to tell you this story for months now.
I'm sure.
One of my favorite things to do when I was a kid was to go
growing
to
up
the,
in Tampa.
Going up to growing up in California, but as a Tampa Bay Rays fan, even before the team existed, mm-hmm. we used to go to the San Francisco Aquarium, and I dug it as a kid. And one of the things I dug the most about the San Francisco Aquarium was they had this giant tank of sturgeon. And this one particular sturgeon, the subspecies is a gar. Now, the gar was at the time they'd gotten this fish in like the 1940s. And I'm not that old. They live for this extended
period
of time.
This is the same fish. This is a real question I have. Were you really at the aquarium?
I was really at the aquarium.
Okay, and there really was this fish.
Oh, no, this is all true.
That had been alive at this point.
At this point, let's just say it's the 1980s, and I walk into the aquarium, and it has been there since the 40s. That's how old the sturgeons live an endless period of time.
They're female sturgeon can live up to 150 years.
There you go. So, and this type of sturgeon,
whoa.
And you can look this up. Is a gar. And it got me thinking, where on earth would the San Francisco Aquarium have rented this gar to have it for so long? And I'm wanting to know if you could possibly tell me.
I don't know for sure.
All right.
Have you ever heard of gar rentals?
I have not.
Gar rentals is an offshoot of Star Rentals.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, as we all know, Star Rentals, duh, we're all Starbies here, all part of the fan club.
Right.
Star Rentals, which sponsors Seattle Sports at Night, is the preferred supplier to the West Best contractors. Well, something you haven't heard of and may not know is that Gar Rentals is the preferred supplier to the West Best Aquarium.
Gotcha. That's yes. where my confusion was. So
yeah.
So it's pretty clear that they understood they wanted to be part of the family mm-hmm. of quality rentals.
Yeah.
And they went for Gar Rentals, affiliated with, of course, as you all know, Star Rentals.
Well, you know how the Marvel Universe has a ton of different things.
This makes total
essentially
sense now.
Star Rentals. This right. is the Star Rentals, pun intended, Star
right.
Universe. Gar Rentals is one of them.
All right then.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to the business at hand.
Okay.
We have more Mariners or more developments to discuss. Even though the main development already happened,
mm-hmm.
someone got fired, but now there's still the aftermath. You know, it's too bad that this didn't happen. Like, if this happens in a pennant chase, we're not talking about it anymore because we got other things to talk about. But it happens in the off season, and like, ooh, we're going to pick this corpse.
Should
for a
I
while.
Do like a 20-second?
Yes,
recap
please
of,
give everyone a recap of
okay,
what we're
so
about.
In case you don't know what we're talking about, Kevin Mather was the CEO and president of the Seattle Mariners. That means there was one person, the chairman, John Stanton,
right.
that was above him. He was very high up within the organization. And I don't even want to say an interview, some kind of like meeting, brunch, breakfast thing.
It was with the Rotary Club.
With yeah, the Bellevue yeah. Rotary Club over a Zoom call. He spilled the beans on a ton of behind-the-scenes information, like when you would want to bring someone up, deals that you would have given someone, thoughts that certain payers were overplayed or boring or overpaid or boring. In addition to that, he also said some pretty offensive things, kind of like thinly veiled racism, about paying for interpreters for a Japanese player who is in a role as like someone helping the team.
Essentially saying he was faking his inability.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And another one where he said that a player who speaks English couldn't speak English very well. So that's an aside. But he has since resigned.
Yeah,
so
I'm
he
sorry.
Wasn't fired. Has since resigned.
Yeah, so for corrections here, midstream correction, I think I said fired
correction
earlier.
Corner.
He was not fired.
He resigned.
That question was even asked to John Stanton.
Ooh,
and apparently he was, and again, I want to emphasize, not fired. He resigned suddenly and surprisingly.
So also, Mike is alluding to the fact that John Stanton, the chairman, was asked, if this guy, Kevin Mather, wouldn't have resigned, would you have fired him? And John Stanton said, well, I didn't need to do that because he resigned. So that got a lot of criticism locally from people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's the story, right? So in this 45-minute conversation, it's not like he said one or two things over the course of 45 minutes. He had like 45 minutes worth of things where people just jaws hit the floor and people were like, I can't believe you're saying this. I can't believe you're sharing this information. Also, I can't believe that you're speaking without abandon to a room where this would normally be stuff you should not ever say. So, no surprise he's not with the team, and I think that's the right decision. However, the fallout is still happening. The story is not over, and outside of just the stuff that is genuinely offensive about what he said in regards to Julio and Hisashi Iwakuma is his comments about Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert. Now, these are two top prospects for the Mariners. One of them, Jared Kelnick, is one of two guys that they are pinning their hopes on, that they are telling fans, look, you've been through almost 20 years of no playoffs. These guys are the key.
Right.
These guys are your stars. These guys are your Griffey. These guys are going to be the A-Rod minus the fact that he left. You know, these guys are the Felix. These are the stars. These are going to be huge deals and they will help take us to greatness. One of those guys is Jared Kelnick. And Jared Kelnick did an interview this morning. Well, it broke this morning. So the idea was, look, what's going to happen with the fallout of this is Jared Kelnick clearly is going to believe that his service time is being manipulated. And again, the 10-second explainer for that is it's against the CBA. You should not be purposely manipulating someone's service time. When you manipulate someone's service time, what you do as a team is you make sure he plays less than 92% of the season so that that year doesn't count as one in his contract and you push back his free agency.
Bingo, which actually is also pushing
it makes
back.
You have him for cheaper for longer.
Cheaper for longer. I mean, there's been all kinds of accusations in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like you get incentives based on having averaging, say, 20 carries a game, all of that sort of stuff. Well, it turns out that the people who are incentivized to maybe not have you reach those goals are the people who pay you. It's an endemic in sports, and this was a big, but rarely is it acknowledged on the management end, almost never.
And there's a reason it's not, because players have filed grievances before. Like, it's not a new conversation at all. Chris Bryant is the most recent example of a player who did not break camp spring training with the team, meaning he was in the minors. And then they were like, oh, well, they needed him to get more experience. Coincidentally, once they passed that threshold of 92% for the season, so the difference was like, it was like April 17th or something, they brought him up and people were like, did that really make a difference?
Right.
Did leaving him in the minors and letting him get a couple more days there make a difference in the broad scheme of things? Or were you just trying to get past that threshold when you would have to count that as a year of service?
Totally. I mean, you know, everyone likes to say, well, you want to ruin him by bringing him up to it. Like, all right, that is true in some cases,
right.
But in some cases, it's a very cynical move to keep someone cheaper longer. And the funny thing is, like, if you're an athlete, you do want to, you've spent your life thinking about the big payday.
Mm-hmm.
And the big payday is when you can actually get out there and value yourself in a realistic way on the market because you're not locked into some early contract.
I understand why teams do it. Teams have to care about the bottom line and care about keeping their biggest stars there for as long as they can, especially when it's cheap. I understand also why players get really upset about it, because you dig into their prime earning potential. Back to Jared Kelnick.
Right.
An article came out this morning in USA Today. It was an exclusive interview with Bob Nightingale, who is a writer there, where Jared Kelnick said that he believes he is the victim of service time manipulation by the Mariners. And he thinks that that's because he's being punished for refusing to sign a contract proposal he was given over a year ago. Now, by the way, we would not know anything about this contract proposal had Kevin Mather not mentioned in a video with the Bellevue Rotary Club that they had offered Jared Kelnick a deal he declined.
Right.
So Jared Kelnick didn't want to sign this deal. And the assumption Jared Kelnick is making is that if he were to sign this deal, which is team friendly, is probably, let's just say Jared Kelnick becomes the star that we think he will, it would have been significantly less than he could have made as a free agent. So he's being not ripped off because he hasn't become anything yet.
Right.
But in his mind, he is worth a lot more, and it's fair for him to think that. In his mind, because he rejected this deal, he is being punished by not being brought up to the big league team, and that if he were to sign the deal, they would have brought him up. And that is the reason. Not more experience. It is, he believes that that is the reason.
You don't want to be paying that much for someone in the minor leagues.
Right.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
And so it makes some sense. And it makes some sense that he could at least build the narrative in his head, which may be true, I don't know, that he is getting punished by the team. And again, why would you say this if you're Kevin Mather? It's so egregiously stupid. And maybe because he was on a Zoom call, and maybe because it wasn't a bunch of
Zoom
people in
makes
a room,
us do weird things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we turn into cats, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can
one.
Do all
That's
kinds of stuff. We can do even weirder things. Like, say if you're, you know, I don't know, Jeffrey Toobin, but you can do, but generally speaking,
why did you take it there?
Well, I'm trying to set the
Zoom
boundaries.
Zoom makes us, you're right. It's a spectrum. Zoom makes us do weird things in a variety of ways.
Right. And so we can say, while he didn't charm us with a cat, he didn't tube in as well, but he completely torpedoed his career.
Yeah. It was a foot and mouth moment.
Oh.
So what's difficult for Jerry DePoto is Jerry DePoto, the GM of the Mariners, by the way, who would be presumably making this decision, say that we had never heard anything from Kevin Mather. Okay. So Jerry DePoto, there's an argument to be made by him that, you know what, Jared Kelnick, he's out of high school. He didn't play college ball. He is 21 years old.
Right.
He has 600 and something plate appearances. He has not played a ton of time in the higher levels of the minors. We want him to get just a little more experience before we bring him up. We know he's not lacking for confidence, but him coming straight into the majors at 21 years old without a ton of experience would be an unprecedented amount of time. He has, it would be similar to like when Griffey came up after being drafted in, I think, 87, had, I think more plate appearances than Kelnick. That was the early 90s.
Right.
Things were a bit different then. Chris Bryant had, the guy I just talked about, had actually, weirdly enough, almost the exact same number of plate appearances.
Really?
So he had 664. Kelnick has 663. Maybe they're swapped, one of the two. But he had significantly more production. So if you're Jerry DePoto, yeah, maybe you want to see a little bit more. Just a little bit more. You want to refine him a little bit before you bring him up. Now, though, I think the one thing Kelnick has on his side here is also public opinion, because fans are very upset with the Mariners, and it is honestly tough that DePoto and manager Scott Service are left cleaning up this mess, trying to convince players, especially these top prospects that know they're going to be stars, trying to convince them, look, we're not trying to cheat you. We want to bring you up when you're ready. How do you trust an organization now?
Well, and also, how do you trust an organization that then your guy who's delivering the apology is saying, he's trying to make you believe that the guy who is my boss, who has strong opinions about baseball and this entire team, and whom I talk to all the time, did not say anything about his opinions of the most important prospect, or maybe one of the two most important prospects in the entire organization, and that we don't have these conversations regularly. And everyone in the room would say this. Like, I mean, the players get unhappy with their manager. They get unhappy with their general manager. They talk amongst themselves, but you still find a way. You blow off steam. We do it about our boss. Everyone does it about their bosses, right? Yet he's actually going to tell this room of people that these conversations just never happened, which is, why not just own it and say, hey, we all talk like this. There was not one mind in this organization. That may have been the way he felt. It's not the way I feel. And then just own it and move it along. Mm-hmm. But what he did was not well received.
So anyway, so that's the latest with the Kevin Mather situation. Yesterday, we talked just about what he said in this video, and we didn't even cover everything. Today, the news continues with Jared Kelnick giving an interview saying he feels like he's being punished for not taking that team-friendly deal. The other thing that I don't know if it's obvious by what I'm saying is the implication for Kelnick is that if he would have signed the deal, and I know I kind of mentioned this, we hinted at this a little bit, that none of this would be happening. That if he would have signed the deal, he would be up there, because that's what a teammate, Evan White, did. Now, you can point to it and you say, well, Evan White had a little more experience. Evan White played college ball. But for Jared Kelenic, he's saying, I don't see a difference.
Well, and I also don't know, and I guess you'd have to know more about sort of the structure of apprentice baseball being college and the minors. But I can't imagine that if he's playing baseball against, I don't know, University of North Carolina, that is somehow a better thing than being in the minors. It seems like in the minors, you're dealing with actual full-grown adults who have played baseball for a while. It seems like they wouldn't have minor leagues unless they were fundamental, and they wouldn't put college players into the minor leagues mm-hmm. unless that was fundamental. I mean, it doesn't seem to me to wash that someone had more college experience. It does wash that they had more minor league experience, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about it. Maybe they're considered equivalencies, but I'm guessing that they aren't.
No, but I think that too, like, if Jared Kelenic comes out and has a great spring training, regardless of the path he's taken through the minors or to get to baseball, whether he played college ball or not, which he didn't, it's going to be hard to say he shouldn't be with the team.
Extremely. It's hard right now. I mean, because DePoto, to his credit or blame, like, again, I'm not going to go back into my favorite Sarah Winchester Mystery House analogy, but this rebuild is, wow. I mean, this better be a palace by the time they're done, because they have certainly, anyone who's dealt with a contractor who just won't get a project done is ready made to become a Mariners fan.
It's all bad. Can I read you the favorite part of my coworker from the article?
Sure.
Okay. So Jerry DePoto apologized to Mariners players, which he said that he did in a press conference. This is also included in the article. So DePoto apologizes to players. Jared Kelenic is asked how that apology was received. And Kelenic, and everyone is mad right now, says, strange. It was literally like someone farted in church. This is the exact expression on everyone's face.
Well, there you go.
Everyone loves a fart joke.
Everyone loves a fart joke. And I have to say that, look, my guess is everyone moves beyond this pretty quickly. I can't see someone who gets fired. Everyone kind of knows about these tensions. It is going to get complicated for the Mariners in contract negotiation because mm-hmm. every single attorney agent who deals with them, has this framed and on the wall at this point, because it did not. And I got to say, you know who the Mariners also pissed off other than their players?
The MLB.
And
the MLBPA.
Every other owner.
Yes.
Every other person negotiating a contract. The Mariners don't have a friend in this one.
Mm-mm.
Not at all. And that's a shame.
Yeah. They're on an island now.
Yeah. There you go. So, wow. We managed to tie this one up. I don't know if we can get a third day out of it, but maybe. Maybe
we'll
not.
See. Well, I mean, I almost like
guys,
hope there isn't
keeps
a third day.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I think this one is ready to be. I mean, the one of the things that it's hard to, if you're a Mariners fan, and sorry about all this sort of negative talk, you've got a lot to be excited about. I mean, they've got people in the organization, at least players in the organization, that are extraordinary right now.
Well, this guy
really
we're
extraordinary,
about.
Right?
Jared Kelenic. I mean, it's not like because this happens, you're not going to see him in the big leagues. This is about...
Or on the Mariners.
Yeah. This issue is about a decision he would be making 6 years from now.
Right.
So the hope is that you have Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto that can get enough trust back from players to really get their rebuild off the ground.
And trust me, you know what builds trust? A 15-game winning streak in May. You know, that's when people start enjoying it and all of this stuff starts washing away. So I'm hoping that this actually is just sort of the, all right, now we've actually, and I got to say, I think that getting rid of someone near the top maybe is not necessarily a bad way for the Mariners to go into the season.
Yeah.
But we'll see. All right, Stacey, thank you. Rachel Bell coming up right after the break. Thank you.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Rachel, every time we hear about Gen Z. I'm not even sure what the birth dates are for Gen Z, but it's the younger folks, obviously. It appears that they grew up in a very different world than you and I did, but they're also seeing the world and interacting with the world in a really different way, especially when it comes to gender issues and sexuality.
Yeah. So I just looked it up as you were talking. So Gen Z is people who were born in the mid to late 90s up until the early 2010s, which I think is like too big for one big generation. But anyway, so according to the Washington Post, one in six Gen Z adults, so they only looked at adults 18 to 23, are... So just to clarify what Gen Z is, I had to look this up. There are so many letters, so many people. So Generation Z is born after 1996, and most of them are turning 24 this year. So that gives you an idea of how old they are. So this article in the Washington Post said that one in six Gen Z adults identify as LGBTQ, and they only looked at adults. So there could be more, you know, all kinds of high school kids who already, of course, have their sexuality identified. So this is ages 18 to 23. So this is the latest survey from Gallup. They surveyed 15,000 people, and they found that 5.6% of U.S. adults identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer, which is up from a 4.5% in 2017. So I think it's interesting to talk about this, though, because think about, you know, in just a short number of years, like back to when our parents were growing up, how many people were out as gay, and then how many people are now? And then this article asks, what's less clear is why. Is it because of a real shift in sexual orientation and gender identity, or is it because of a greater willingness among young people to identify as LGBTQ? I think that is not a good question. I think that the reason that there are more people now, one in six Gen Z adults, is A, gay marriage has been legal since they were kids, so it's pretty normal. And that means that people... You know, not everyone, of course, and not all places, but a lot more people are not as afraid to come out. And then according to Philip Hammack, who's a psychology professor and the director of the Sexual and Gender Diversity Laboratory at UC Santa Cruz, he said the big reason is internet. You know, when he was coming out in the 90s, even there was no YouTube or Instagram. There was no way to connect with people who are outside of your immediate, you know, vision line.
Right.
And so they have all of this information and, of course, people that they can look up to and connect with all over the world if they need support.
Yeah, it seems to me like you're probably onto something with the idea that it's become a little more boring. You know, it's become a little more normal for these sort of things. I remember really there was this everyone in my hometown who ended up going to junior college, which was everyone in my hometown. There was a kind of this legendary human sexuality class that everyone would end up taking. I don't think it was a requirement, but it was an elective because it was considered such an amazingly interesting class. And really kind of the first time you're getting exposed, at least this is in 1984, you're getting exposed to a lot of ideas that you didn't even know were out there. And one of the really interesting studies that they showed, and I think this was a Harvard study from many years ago, that most people don't graph 100% on either fully homosexual or fully heterosexual. Most people are in some sort of continuum in the middle if you take, you know, both extremes, right? And the fact is that and the secondary part of that is most people are habituated one way or another depending on their experiences and their predilection. And this is just essentially validating kids who maybe aren't hardwired one way or the other to pick a direction for a period of time or forever that they just dig, that works better for them. And there's now a ready-made support community to not alienate them immediately.
Right. And to what you just said in this article, they said that more than half of LGBTQ adults identify as bisexual, which kind of leans into what you're saying.
Bingo.
Not everybody is all or nothing. And so that seemed to be like the vast majority of people identify as bi, which anybody who is kind of a part or who reads about it knows that a lot of bisexual people feel shunned because the queer community rejects them and the straight community rejects them. And a lot of people are like, you know, just pick a side, and which is so ridiculous, you know, because like you said, you know, I mean, it's like a Keynesian thing. Like people don't always, it's a cultural thing that makes us feel like we need to be one or the other.
Well,
but yeah, I mean, the best thing about more and more people coming out is that it is more and more normalized. And that means more and more people not experiencing violence or hate and having a normal, happy life.
Yeah. But so to what you were saying earlier, I think that it's not. I think that the reason that people want you to declare in a tribe is that because if you don't, if you're sort of, you know, you're the idea being that if you're straddling both worlds sexually or even in your general interest, you are not committing to anything that actually has a sort of a larger truth and effort behind it. In other words, you know, all of the people who fought for gay rights, for example, I think that they I'm not trying to justify it, but you can see why they would think, well, we need people. If we don't have people who are all in, we're not going to get anywhere. I mean, maybe now we're at a transitional period where that sort of idea is more acceptable politically. I'm not talking about sexually. You can understand why they feel like someone who identifies as bisexual feels like they're without a team. They're kind of internally probably the biggest team, but they're not accepted because they're not on the fringe. And this happens with political parties too, for that matter. You're not one of the activists, you're not one of the fully committed, at least in some people's view.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, when a marginalized community then kind of splits off and kind of harasses part of its own community, it's confusing because you think, you know, why are you doing this? Like, you've experienced hate before. Why are you hating on someone who's just trying to be themselves? But I think you're right. There's a lot invested in it. And I don't know if you saw this documentary. It was so great. It was from 2014 called Do I Sound Gay? And it was trying to explore the speech patterns of gay men.
There's
a lot of stereotypes about how gay men in particular speak. And in that documentary, I feel like those kind of issues came up, and it was something that I had always actually thought about. One of the hypotheses they had was something I had thought of before this movie. It was my idea, but the idea of like, if you're in a marginalized community, if you're on the fringe, all you want to do is belong. So you have your community, and if you're gay, you want to be in with that community. And so maybe you start speaking a certain way so that you all know who each other are. You know, it's easier to find each other and it's easier to belong. That was kind of a theory from that movie that I thought was fascinating.
Well, it also makes complete sense because if you hang out with the jocks, you know, in high school, you start talking like them. I mean, there's no question that we will adopt the traits of our subcultures, right? And so that actually, as far as the documentary goes, that wasn't terribly surprising to me, right? I mean, it wasn't like there's a genetic predisposition, at least I don't think. It's a social predisposition, and that makes complete sense because, I mean, even people in newsrooms have a certain way of speaking that
yes,
is different,
yeah,
you know, that is different and potentially illegal in many other workplaces. I think this is a super interesting issue.
I do too. If I could go back and study something different, I might choose linguistics because just regional accents are so fascinating. I mean, all humans all want to do is belong, and everything kind of fits in, you know, to that quilt. Like, everybody talks the way they do because of the place that they're from, because they're trying to sound like everybody else. But going back to this idea of, you know, younger people feeling more comfortable coming out, you know, I graduated from high school in 1997, which I consider to be very modern. You know, to me that wasn't the olden days.
Right.
But I didn't know a single person in my high school who was out. Not one. And so, you know, the fact that now one in six of this generation who the oldest are 23, 24 years old, that's incredible.
Yeah. And the thing is that you're going to have a lot of people, including some people that I know pretty well, who are going to say, well, yeah, but if they're on YouTube, YouTube is making them this way. And like, yeah, no.
I don't even engage in those arguments.
I can't even
start to get into it. It's not like being gay is a new invention. I mean,
bingo.
History. It has existed since people existed. And
before people declared an allegiance, it was there.
Exactly.
Right.
And what I hope, which is something that I've read in the past couple of years, which, you know, was a real epiphany for me. The hope is that someday you don't have to come out, because that means that you're different and you have to, you know, have all of this stress and these nerves, and you have to tell your family and you hope they accept you. The idea would be that once you become the age where you are sexual, then you just kind of are what you are. And your parents are just like, okay, you know, like, why do you have to come out? Why can't both ways of being or multiple ways of being just be the norm? And you just kind of have to pick one.
Right. It was interesting. I was talking with, I made the mistake, this is years ago, of saying something about first gay, I don't know, quarterback or something like that, somebody in college I was referencing, and the person immediately stopped me and said, publicly declared. Right. You said you got to remember that, like because the statistics you see are not the statistics as they exist because of the whole societal pressure and even internal pressure about self-denial that exists out there. And so that's absolutely, absolutely true. All right, Rachel.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was a dynamite story. I guess, what do I say now? I always have trouble saying goodbye to you.
But I know we have every day.
It's a struggle.
Call this segment the awkward goodbye.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, well, I'll talk to you later.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm like, you hang up. You hang up first. Come on, you hang up.
All right. I'm going to hang up first, Rachel. Talk to you tomorrow.
Fine.
Coming up, of course, it is our final thoughts of the evening before we get on out of here. Please stay tuned. All right, another evening in the books. We've got tomorrow is Thursday, right? Thursday.
Yep.
All right, so we're rolling onto that, but before we get there, we do have to dump a little cargo before we move back into port. So, Frank, what do you got?
Watched the debut of Superman and Lois last night. On time delay.
Your arms are crossed. I'm assuming you didn't like it.
I don't know what I think about it. My biggest issue with it isn't Superman, isn't Lois, is they have two sons. And I always get cranky when somebody decides, well, we have to add this element to make the character better and more relatable and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
I don't believe in deconstructing superheroes. I think that's not why we go to see them.
Right.
I don't want, you know, and so I have a little bit of an issue with taking the big blue Boy Scout, which is what he is,
right,
and giving him two sons, one of whom is troubled, right, and then the other one.
Right.
I just like, but we'll see. We'll see. I'll give
it
a chance.
Do his kids have superpowers?
One of them just manifested them in the pilot episode. And of course, it's the more troubled of the two sons.
As you would hope.
Well, as you would hope, not me. Okay, we'll see what happens.
All right, Shane.
I had an exceptionally beautiful day.
Oh, yeah.
Day on top of the hill.
Did go up. Good.
Yes, I did go up. Not a single cloud in the sky today.
Beauty.
It was nice and warm. It was the first day I didn't feel like I had to wear a sweatshirt. And I shoveled more today than I probably have in weeks. It was a lot of work.
I wonder you were stretching and groaning when you were standing around.
Yeah, my shoulders are tight tonight.
I bet.
But it was all worth it because I got to see a couple avalanches go. And avalanches are my deepest, darkest fear. They haunt my dreams every single day.
They ought to.
They haunt my dreams. And being able to sit back and watch a helicopter fly by and throw explosives out and just make it all go away, and you get to sit there and watch it and not have to worry about dying. It's a really nice experience. It was really fun.
It's cathartic.
Yeah, it's nice.
I bet. All right, so what do I have in my mind? I actually am not entirely certain about that. I would say this, that one of the stories I wanted to talk about tonight that I didn't get a chance to get to was, this is an awful story, and so I'm going to try and make it as brief as possible because it's hard not to get emotional for anyone when you hear the story, but it's about a Houston Chronicle story about a six-year-old kid who froze to death in his house.
Oh.
He had just gone out, played in the snow the first time. Family loses power and electricity. The parents find the kid. It was sub-zero. Not sub-zero. I'm sorry. It was sub-zero. It was like 6 degrees inside the house.
Oh.
And the kid ends up dying. And the thing about this that makes me so enraged is that this is a man. This is not a freak winter storm. This is a man-made problem in Texas. Texas decided to completely deregulate their industry, so there was no backup system available.
Right.
They're off the federal grid. It is, if everyone there is not looking themselves, and today, five directors on the utility board, the commission, resigned because of this, not just this kid. He's not the only one who died, but you read the story about him, and like that day he was like out playing in the snow, and in his first snow.
It's terrible.
It is heartbreaking. And I do hope that that comes to something, because what I feel initially is that people should be going to jail. But what I'm hoping is that they take a good hard look at it and don't keep going on utilities need to function like a business. No, they don't. They need to be available all the time. And if they don't run at a profit, I don't care. Because when people need power and they need electricity, someone with an oxygen machine, someone who's not doing well, someone old, someone young, these things need to actually be taken care of by us. And by us, I mean government. And it's completely ridiculous what happened in Texas. And so I am sorry, folks. I don't mean to leave you with a bad note, but that story so got to me. I was worried about talking about it on air because it gets me incredibly worked up. And this is one of those things that if we want to look at the problem here, we need to look in the mirror, because we've done things like this, and this is absolutely inexcusable. So, folks, I'll have something happier to say tomorrow, I promise you. But thank you for coming to join us again at Cairo Nights, and we will be back tomorrow, same time. You know, in the end, I'll always